first episode of the Say Network podcast, and this is just a podcast that we've put together where we can share different things that we've learned from our mistakes and successes over the years, a chance to talk about relevant topics and answer any questions, and hopefully just share something that will be useful to our listeners. I'm Megan, and I am the Young Adult Coordinator for the Youth Department.
And I'm Jim Sparks, and I am the Territorial Director of Youth Ministries. I forgot what it was for a little bit, but yeah, so this will be fun. We've actually failed a lot, and so we want to share what we've learned kind of through all of that process and how things are different and how we operate.
Yeah, so that kind of spurred on this idea of talking about creative programming. And in the youth department, you know, we do quite a bit of programming for a lot of different events and a lot of different types of events as well. And so we get a lot of questions on how our process works and how do we plan stuff? How do we make things meaningful? And what is kind of like our creative process through that? And so we're just going to be talking a little bit about creative programming. And so, Jim, you've been doing this longer than I have. So
just a little bit.
I'm just going to kind of ask you a couple things about programming just from your perspective. Why do you think it's important to do good programming?
Well, I mean, really, the idea of doing good programming is to try to connect with the user, whoever it is, whether it be young adults or teens or whatever. We want to connect with them and just so we could have, we have to create good programming so we make that connection. I know it sounds obvious, but we're competing against their phones. We're competing against their tablets, whatever. We're competing against the world on this, and we have a more important message to deliver, and we want to lead them to Jesus. So it needs to be good. Good doesn't mean flashy. It doesn't mean like robust. You don't have to have a large budget. You just have to build a program that connects, and that's good programming.
Yeah, that makes sense. When it comes to programming, good, bad, whatever it is, there's a lot of different approaches that people take to programming. Just over the years, are some of the approaches that maybe you've taken or the youth department's taken or that you've seen other people take to programming for an event or for something?
Yeah, I think the obvious one, kind of the elephant in the room, is the lazy programming method. Let's just get it done. And or you're planning while you're driving and you're trying to create a lesson on the go and you're opening Sermon Central and whatever could come close to what you're talking about, you'll just steal whatever. That's lazy programming. And we've all been guilty of doing that. And then there's intentional programming where something is well thought through and thought out and it matters. Every section matters. And everything leads to each other and to communicate your message. And sometimes it's just fun programming. You know, when we talk about intentional programming, a lot of times we lose sight on fun. And I'm completely guilty of that. We realized a couple of years ago the programs we were creating were very emo and kind of dark and like, I don't know, it was good and probably had an impact. It was, we lost the fun. And so, there could be fun programming. Fun could be intentional as well. And so you want to have a balance, but, at the end of the day, it has to be culturally relevant. The program, it has to be relevant to who you are. You have to know your people and you have to know what they like and don't like. And sometimes you don't always do things that they like. You have to kind of push them in different directions a little bit, especially if they keep coming back. Like for the events that we do, we get people that come back all the time and it would be boring just to show up and do the same thing. For some, that's great comfort. But for most, they want to try something new. They may be afraid to try something new. And so we want to do that. But our program needs to be intentional. If we're trying to communicate a message and we want people to know Jesus, we have to lead that part all the way through. And we have to have a story. We have to have it scripted out. And we should have spent time praying over this and really kind of vetting that process. And that's, when you've done that, you're still liable to make mistakes, but your success rate is much higher when you're being very intentional on that. And there's a whole big process on how to become more intentional in your programming.
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in more depth, because I think that's probably what we get the most questions on is, is how do you, you know, do these different things? And I think also, well, when I first came into the department, it's been 7-ish years ago. You guys were already kind of programming in this method, not even kind of, you guys were programming in this sort of method that we're going to talk about. And so can you just talk a little bit? And also, let me just say, like, for me, that was brand new. I never had thought about programming in that way. In my previous experience, you know, we were kind of guilty of just doing what we would always do. Oh, we've always done it this way, so let's just kind of plug something in. And that's kind of what we did. And so coming into this department was a really big eye-opener for me to see a different way of programming, just to kind of make things more meaningful and create a new experience for people. So can you talk a little bit about how this method kind of came to be, and how did you guys start using this way of programming?
Yeah. I mean, the easy answer is it came through failure, or not. Failure might be a little heavy on some of it, just not being overly successful. We would do events and they'd be great. Like, as far as like, the music would be good and we'd have maybe fancy lights or projection or stuff like that. But when you kind of were honest in your debrief of that, maybe the message didn't actually connect, and we were focusing our attention too much on kind of the wrong areas. And while on paper, I mean, not on paper, but on video and the pictures, it looked amazing. And so people were like, wow, that looked great. But there really is no depth in any of that stuff. And I was realizing that a lot of what we were doing wasn't connecting to each other either. And so, you know, the morning chapel could be about the prodigal son, and then the evening one could be, I don't know, something like Jesus walking on water. And like, it kind of takes you on these different routes that you could probably make sense of, but we just were doing it because we wanted that meeting to do stuff. And so we started to look at how can we tell a larger story and be creative while doing that. And so now, you know, hopefully in all of our events, it tells a story. There's a longer story. It all connects and things move together. And it's not just in the meetings, but it's also in the breakout sessions or even in some of the games that we're playing. It's got a little bit of a tie to what we're talking about. And so as the process kind of got crafted over the years, we've kind of created a little bit of a formula for it to make it easier on us to program. And Megan and I were talking about, we don't have a name for it, but it's just something that we do and we're comfortable with. But yeah, we need to come up with a name. I don't know.
The creative process is so very original.
It's not. Yeah. Ironically, we're not very creative at naming things, because if you look at our themes are like love, life, bold, beautiful. Yeah. We're pretty simple in our themes, but we're going to be talking about themes in another one, so I won't get ahead of ourselves.
All right. Well, in this creative, the creative process, for lack of a better term.
That's a working title.
True. Let's just kind of talk through some of the steps. How if I'm in a core, if I'm doing this for the first time, what does this process look like? Like, I know there's the multiple steps to it that we go through. Let's just kind of talk through the steps.
Yeah. And kind of the first expectation that we all have here is that it takes time. It takes a lot of time. And so there is an expectation, and that when we're planning something, we're planning it months, if not a year out, because it takes time, because things change. Sometimes maybe a large event happened, a significant event, and it changes our culture. And so we have to be able to kind of change with that. So,
and we also plan months, and you're right, months in advance. Like, we start talking about WYI themes basically at the end of the existing WYI.
Sometimes during WYI.
Exactly.
Yeah. And sometimes we'll have like a thought right there and gather the team together and say, hey, I have this thought. And it's usually based off something that was done at the event, whether it be something that a kid said in a testimony or just a response they may have had to a certain meeting. So like love, we've done it twice. I can't believe we did something twice. It's first time ever. But love, the original time we did love, it came because of those focus groups that we did with the young men and young women. And we realized that in the men's one, usually the stereotypical topic would be talk about sex, and it didn't happen. They were talking about this lack of love in their life, depression and significance. And so that resonated with us. And we found that it was similar topics in the girls. And then we came with love, and it really connected because that's where they were at. But that comes with that. So the first step in this process is to identify your outcomes. And a lot of times we have goals or some sort of mission statement. I'm not a giant fan of mission statements because a lot of times they feel like they were copied off the internet and they have like fancy cliche words and you're like, hey, this is amazing. We exist to produce the most quality, blah, 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 blah. So let's just make it simple and we focus on outcomes. What do we want to achieve in this event? What do we want that person to walk away from? And that's different. Even with YI, which we've been doing it for years and years, that changes every year. What do we want them to achieve and walk away from? So we identify those. We put them on a big, giant whiteboard. And we usually have, I don't know, it ranges. There's no standard number. We've had, usually it's three because everyone loves the number three, but we've had like up to seven that one time where we had a bunch of different layers on top of that.
Yeah. And I feel like the outcomes, to me, this is the most time consuming part of the entire process.
Yes.
Sometimes is coming up with the outcomes because you really have to think through what do you want to achieve? And sometimes that's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you start off, well, we want everyone to know Jesus. That's the outcome. Well, yeah, I mean, it is, but we kind of get, it's hard to say deeper than that on that topic.
than loving
Jesus, but we have to think like very specifically, what do we want them to do? How does that encounter happen? And so, yeah, it does take a long time. And sometimes we don't settle it in one meeting. And sometimes it'll take a couple meetings to settle on our outcomes for that year. You do not talk about design or anything like that yet. That's way down the line. We have to lock in the outcomes first. The second part is to talk about the story. What do we want to communicate? And then lay out that story. Like what is it that we want to do? And so just an example, this year for YI, we're talking about life. The theme is life. And so our story that we're working on, this could change. And that's the other thing is we have to be willing to change this process if it's just not working. But the first day would be talking about the incarnation, life like us. The second day would be the Sabbath, life at rest. Third day is the resurrection, life for us. And then fourth day is kingdom, life forever. And so once we kind of have that, then we're going to start building pieces in each meeting that connect each other, connect themselves to each other, and then kind of lay out a story. The third part is inventory. I think a lot of times we grossly underestimate what we have at our disposal. It's very easy for us to say, well, we don't have any money, and we don't have fancy lights, we don't have any of that stuff. And sure, that happens a lot. But so what we do, and we do it pretty regularly, I wouldn't say we do it every time, but for the most part, we do it for our big events, is we write down everything that we have available to us, I've programmed at camp for 20 years now, which makes me sound kind of old, but my goal is always to, how can we use camp in a different way? Because here's the issue that we have. These people will come, and keep coming to the same camp. It's the same camp. It's got the same rock wall. It's got the same zip line. It's got the same janky basketball court. You know, it's got the same stuff. So how do we give them a fresh take on it? And so take a look at the camp, and we've used camp in really different ways over the years. But we wouldn't have been able to do that unless we really listed out what do we have available to us and kind of think outside the box. And in the core setting, I got this idea from, I can't even remember, to be honest. It was some youth worker a really, really long time ago, but they do an inventory sheet for their youth work, and they give it out, pass it out to the congregation, and then they turn it in of what would you be willing to let the youth use or do. And so one guy wrote in, said, I have a boat. I'd love to take them water skiing and stuff. Well, this guy had been part of their congregation for years, and that never once came up. But because it was asked, he thought about it and said, oh, yeah, why wouldn't we do this? And then now you have that as something for your disposal. So coming up with what you have can dictate what you're going
to
go.
Does it help to think of it in terms of what you have with not just like things and spaces, but people as well?
Oh,
like
definitely.
What skills do the people in your congregation have, or that type of thing?
Sure. Yeah. And what I like specifically about that, and I'm glad you brought that up, is that that helps with like mentoring as well. And so like, if you have people, you have a lot of people that will say, well, I don't have that in my core, but I have this person. And I realized, like, I don't know, this person is a CPA and thinks they can't do anything with youth work. But it turns out we have a high school senior that wants to be a CPA. And then so you get them connected. And that could be part of your inventory. That the people could be your inventory to get them connected. And a core setting, too, is a piece of inventory. Like, and it's weird to say it like that, but an opportunity is some of the seniors at our core could be your best communications people. Senior citizens have a social network that is faster than any online social network that we have. It's pretty robust, and it's secretive, and I think we'll learn it when we retire. But in the core setting, you could have them do the communication, make the phone calls, the invitations, and they'll jump at that at any opportunity. So lay it out and be creative in your resources. Like for me, a lot of times I will walk on a piece of camp property and I'll see a space that I know doesn't get used. And I just will stare at that space sometimes for years going, how can we use that space and have fun? And so like an example is at Redwood Glen at Steep Hill, we did a super slippery thing game that was probably dangerous and may have hurt some people. And I don't know.
I think we did get a cease and desist from the nurse on that one.
Well, then that would have been our second one. But I saw that space. I'm like, let's use that hill. That's funky. I don't think anyone's ever programmed anything. And let's just see what we could do with it. And
the same with the water tower, too. We did something at Craig's in the water tower.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't even know that water tower existed until we did that.
Yeah. It's an empty, giant water tower that had been staring at for years in my life, going, we could do something with that. And so because of this particular water tower, you could get inside. It doesn't have water anymore. And we did a worship service inside the water tower, and it was amazing. The acoustics were amazing. So, but we wouldn't know that unless you laid out all of that. And so then once you have your outcomes, your story, and then your inventory, then it becomes the peace process. You have your schedule. So you work on your logistics. You have your schedule, your dates. You start working on your guests and then your actual spaces. You kind of lay out, these are the spaces that we have. And then you start piecing your program together and start looking at what do you have in your inventory that will help you achieve the story and then in turn the outcomes. That sounds kind of confusing through a podcast. It's easier when you can draw it out. But and then you could do that. And I found that I wish I would have done something like this when I was a camp program director. So like a process I do at the camps is I just have them write down every song and skit that they know. Just write it out. Just write it out because you forget. But then once you start writing it out, you're like, oh, I got another one. And then we just put a giant menu on the board and you're just pulling off the menu. And then you have fresh looks on that.
But you're pulling things out that fit that those outcomes that you've selected. So it's not just feeling random, like, you know, you have a theme of life, but you're doing a song about something that has nothing to do with life. It's actually all kind of fits together really, really nicely, a nice flow.
Yeah. And so like we're talking about life. And so like right now our process is to think, how do we communicate this message? Like, how are we going to communicate Sabbath, and then how do you communicate Sabbath in a meeting? And so like the meetings should have some sort of experiential type way of learning on that. And I think that's what we try to do for most of our meetings. And so I don't have an answer for that. And right now for the Sabbath meeting, I wrote down on the board, like a quick to listen meeting. I also have, the song In This Quiet Moment, just some, I think it's a old songster song or whatever, but
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. But how do we program like in this quiet moment and being still? And the easy thing to do is have fantastic like lights and band and sound and all that stuff. And I think that always should exist, but how do we communicate the message without that as well? And that shouldn't be the communication vessel. And so what do? Do we have a blank meeting, a still meeting? We've done different versions of that kind of stuff, but how do we get the person to truly understand what it means to be still? And so that's the process. And so what will happen is that will be up on our board for a while, and we just kind of keep coming back to it. And we call it the farm. It's put on the farm, and all of our ideas, they'll just kind of sit there, and we kind of talk it through and see where it goes. Sometimes our ideas are well thought out and we're ready to go and we fire and it's easy and it works. And sometimes we have to change in the middle of the week.
I was going to say, 1 year, not too long ago, we changed an entire meeting like the week of WYI.
Well, we've done it inside the week.
Yeah.
Too. Like the first meeting didn't go like what we thought. And so, but the problem is the way we programmed it, the last meeting was going to be a complete reversal of the first meeting. And since the spirit moved in a different way, we had to figure out what to do in that last meeting.
Well, I think that hits on something important too, is just being flexible about things. You know, not being feeling completely tied that you have to, you know, follow through on this certain thing, but being flexible and being open to when the spirit does move or when you really feel strongly like you need to kind of go a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's been many, many times at YI where it's very clear it's going in a different direction. Let's just let it go and see where it goes. And that happens, and that's more beneficial to us because it's obvious and we know that, hey, we're going to be going in the right direction if we let it go. Now, that doesn't mean that some people won't get to do like their testimony or stuff like that, but I've never met a person be like, oh, come on, and they get angry. They're like, oh, thank you. But so then once you kind of have that process down, then you can start working on the design. I think one of the mistakes that a lot of people make in creative programming is they think by having a creative design or a creative design looking poster makes everything creative, and it doesn't. And sometimes it pigeonholes you and into what you're doing. And so we put the design process last. We don't talk about set design or even what the poster will look like or kind of the feel until the end. And
well, I think it almost makes it easier in a sense, because you already have direction and you already kind of know where you're going. It gives you ideas from a design perspective as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then once you get your design, now then you're looking right, then you go right back to the beginning and what are the outcomes and where do we start and are we going to be able to achieve those? So yeah, then it kind of comes full circle, but everything needs to go through that funnel, through that outcomes funnel. It's like your filter. Are we doing this? Is this going to lead to this outcome? And if it's not, then it doesn't get done. Even if it's a really, like, I don't know, you think you're really passionate about that idea. If it doesn't work, it's not going to work. And so you just let it go. And we've had ideas, the speed testimony night that we did, that idea was on the table for probably 3 or 4 years before we actually executed it. And when the time was right. So sometimes you just have to back off.
Well, and it's cool because we've been able to use some of that as well for other things. Like the speed testimony idea, I totally use that at Service Corps orientation because it's such a great way for people to get to know each other in a short amount of time and share their testimony and it's practical.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so let me just some quick tips. Basically, is steal. Megan just talked about steal. Stealing is good as long as you give credit. If you steal from yourself, then it's easier because you don't have to give credit. But steal, but make it your own. You can't cookie cutter things because your culture is different. The people you serve is different. So steal and make it your own. I steal mostly from like the 1960s and 70s, like old Salvation Army stuff. And then we just make it new. And so that's a good thing. Simple. Try to be simple. Now, simple is hard. It's not an easy thing to do. So we want to be very mindful of it. Simple is very hard to do because simple doesn't mean lazy. Simple doesn't mean you've kind of done a little bit of work, like less work. Simple means content is king. It has to be, the content has to be the focus, has to be the driving force, and it has to be so good that it takes care of everything else. And so, but I just like keeping it simple and raw and just real. And then fluff is cheap. And I think fluff is the biggest trap in programming. You're just throwing things in because you feel like the meeting needs to be longer, or you feel like you need to do this. Putting games, minute to win it games, in the middle of your worship service is, to me, unnecessary, because it distracts a lot of stuff, and it's just fluff. It's just a filler for something else. And so, so fluff is cheap, and really not a lot of people like rewinds. You know what I mean? So reruns. But but seek others' input as well. If you're doing this by yourself, that's a big mistake that I learned over the years, is I was trying to do a lot of this myself. And who's to say that my thought process is correct and my style is everybody else's style? And so I found over the years, the more that we could collaborate with a greater group, the better things are, much better than anything I could create. And I just been over the years completely like wowed by some of the things, like, man, I wish I had that idea. That's really cool. So, collaborate as much as you can. And cause it's tiring otherwise, you get exhausted and it's a lot of work. And then the last part, and this is a very, very important part, is, debrief. So, we have to debrief all of our stuff. If we want it to be good the next time or our next event to be good, we have to debrief. And in this department, we don't debrief food, like location, what else? Like weather.
Things that we can't really change. Yeah, we don't really have control.
We don't even really talk about it. So it's very simple. We do three things that are good, three things that didn't go so well. And one of each has to be a personal one. So something I did really well or something I didn't do so well. And since we've kind of gotten to this process, I think it's helped spurred on ideas for the future, but it also helps with our own transparency. Like if we make a mistake, the other person's like, yeah, I got you. Cause we're willing to admit that we made that mistake. And I honestly think the debrief process is the driving force for the next event and spurs the creativity for the next event, because we're looking and say, this was really good. And then the question always is how do we make it better? How do we make what that was better? And so that's really important, the debrief process.
Yeah, definitely. I always really enjoy that part of it, because not only are you debriefing it, but you really are thinking about it in terms of making it better for the next year. And we write those things down, and it's interesting because we do revisit them and we do look at those when we start our planning for like the next year of WII. We go back and look at, well, what were some of those things that we talked about changing and stuff, and we do address those. So I think that's really good. I don't know if this is going to be easy to do, but I was thinking maybe we could go through an example of this from a core setting. I think a lot of our listeners are going to be youth leaders, youth workers, volunteers in the core. So we do a lot of territorial events. That's our primary function. But I'm curious, how might this play out in a core setting? Can we go through this process in a core setting through a podcast?
I don't know. We'll try to keep it very simple. Because mind you, each one of these steps takes a really long time, and we break these steps down quite a bit. But yeah, let's choose what type of event should we choose? I don't know, something fun, because it makes it a little bit more difficult. Lock-in.
Oh, the famous lock-in.
Yeah, the lock-ins are of the devil. No one likes a lock-in. There's no one at 11 o'clock a.m. the next day is like, man, I'm sure glad we had that lock-in. And they're like, no, that was a bad idea. But yeah, we still do it.
Kids and youth leaders both.
So what would be the outcome of a lock-in that we want? What we're trying to achieve.
To have fun.
Have fun, yep. Yeah, that's good. Maybe this one, we want them to have an understanding of kind of being like bound or like controlled by something. You know, if we're talking about lock-in and it's, you're kind of being bound and you're stuck, and maybe having a hard time getting out. And so they have an understanding, and maybe that we talk about freedom out of that. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's kind of experiential. And so we want them to have a sense of freedom would probably be our outcome out of that. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then a lock into our inventory, we'd have the community center that we could use. We could use the church.
Maybe there's a fellowship hall, an outdoor space,
yeah.
Whatever you have at the core.
Yeah. And then maybe we'd ask the question, instead of a lock in, what if we did a lock out, you know, where they're just homeless out in the parking lot doing something like that.
Hey, I've heard of CORE doing that before.
Yeah. And then, yeah, go through that process. And then, so the idea was freedom. And then we'd talk about, some, I don't know, stories in the Bible that freedom, I mean, the most obvious, if this is evangelistic, meant is, I don't know, Jesus dying on the cross for us and really breaking that down. And I think even with kids that have been raised in a church, the actual gospel message is needed to be heard and understood. So, I don't know, maybe we go in that direction. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to not like write it all down, but going in that message. And so if we're talking about freedom and it's locked in, that all of our programming elements need to have an element of that. So I don't know if you could do like an escape room type stuff or, you know, those type of programming elements that is kind of still speaking that message, not overtly, but subtly, and that you could use that in your devotions and your small groups. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd still hate the lock in, but anyway, that's a little bit of the creative process. There's obviously a lot more, and feel free to shoot us an email. Both Megan and I are on Outlook, and we respond to emails. And so if you have questions, let us know. We'll be happy to Skype with you and kind of talk through this further. But
yeah, it's easier to have a visual, I think.
Yeah.
So, and we could sit down with you and kind of walk you through this.
Yeah. But all that to say is take the time on your programming. If you want, creativity is just good content. Because it's easy to do all the splashy stuff, but good content is the key to victory. Last part, we'll close out the this podcast with we're each bringing a youth culture piece, and so Megan, tell us about the Bible Project.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to share about the Bible Project. A few years ago, I felt just really compelled, convicted, I don't know what the word is exactly, but to read the Bible from cover to cover. I had never done that, and I turned 30 years old, and I just felt like, man, I really need to do that. I need to know what's in the Word if I'm going to be better at teaching it and leading it. And also there was just a lot of stuff I hadn't read in there. So I decided to read it from cover to cover. And to help me do that, I found this resource called The Bible Project. And The Bible Project basically has just an entire reading plan to help you read through the Bible in a year. In all honesty, it took me longer than a year. It took me like a year and a half, but I did finish it. And so they have a Bible plan. You just kind of check off each day the chapters that you've read. And then after that, there's videos for each Bible book in the Bible. And they're kind of context videos. So they give you an idea of what's going on. Where does that book fit in kind of the whole Bible as a whole? Where do those characters fit? What's going on? Different things like that. And it was really, really helpful. It honestly brought so much kind of depth to my understanding of the Bible and helped me really look at the Bible in a new way. And so I highly, highly recommend it. It's January, so it's not too late if anybody's interested in reading through the Bible. The other thing I like about the Bible Project is you can use it on a personal level, but you can also use it with, like in a small group or with a youth group or anything like that. The videos are animated, so they're really, really interesting to watch. They're really good. I would say anywhere from probably middle school to on up through adult, I would say they're appropriate for that age. And, yeah, it just, for me, it really transformed the way that I think about and look at the Bible. And so I highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Did you read from the Bible or did you read through the Bible through your tablet or did you go actual Bible?
That's a good question. So I actually read a hard copy of the Bible. I know, rare
nice.
These days, but I read through the whole thing. I like that because I can actually like mark it up and write notes and remember things about it. So
nice.
I went old school and I went with the actual hard copy of the Bible.
What version?
NIV.
Purist. No, actually, that wouldn't be purist. We'll ask Dave what that means. mine is not very similar to yours, youth culture piece. And This is just highlighting that kids do dumb things for attention. Teens are eating laundry detergent for the Tide Pod Challenge. That's a real thing. Let me just tell you what's inside the Tide Pod. Ethanol, hydrogen peroxide, and polymers. Polymers. A highly toxic mix of detergent meant to wipe out dirt and grime.
All right.
And, yeah, so they're just, you know, those little flubby little things? That's what they're biting into and probably filming their reactions. So
that can't taste good. That has to taste terrible.
No, and it's, like, I feel like that's pretty damaging to your insides. I know it's meant to clean clothes, but probably not your insides. But why is everything a challenge? Why do we live in a world just full of challenges? And it's usually dumb challenges. But anyway, this is what's happening right now in the world of teenagers, what's currently happening. I do understand that laundry detergent makers are trying to change their design so people don't do this and dealing with all that stuff. But this is not something that we copy in programming. I'm just saying this
won't make it on the inventory list.
So my question is, what's the grossest thing that you've had to bite into? Because mine is a DayQuil. We had to bite a DayQuil in half, and there's that little gel things inside. That's what we had to do, and it was foul.
That's awful. That sounds awful.
It was a really bad experience. So I call in these teenagers dumb, but I was dumb when I did that. So I don't know. What about you, Megan? What did you ever have to do a challenge like that?
Oh man, gosh, I think mine's not as bad as that, but, and this to some people isn't even gross, which just blows my mind. But I think grossest thing that I've bitten into would just be like raw spam, like just straight out of the can in a youth group thing. I don't even remember what we were doing, but had to take a bite of that and it was nasty. It had the jelly on it. It was horrible.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. Abraham?
Taco Bell.
How dare you? All right, well, that's podcast one. Well, no, that's a company.
Episode number one.
That's episode one for our podcast. And
that's a movie.
And then, we'll talk to you in the next podcast. Thank you, Abraham, our trusty producer, executive, sound engineer. As you guys listen to the credits scroll, Abraham's name is all over it. So thank you, Megan, and we'll see you later.